1:30 in the afternoon in a rainy day in Winnipeg. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And your website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is www.IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're thrilled to be joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by the new president of hockey operations of the Columbus Blue Jackets, John Davidson. Mr. Davidson, first of all, congratulations and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hi, gang. My pleasure. And by the way, it's not Mr. It's either John or JD, whatever you prefer. Not Mr. Okay.
Gotcha. Well, it'll be JD from now on. How's that sound?
Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
First question has to be, you know, when you and Craig Patrick, who's now your colleague with the Columbus Blue Jackets, were teammates on the 74-75 St. Louis Blues, did you guys sit around talking about how one day you'd be running the expansion Columbus Blue Jackets?
Well, back in those days, we didn't even know it was going to happen in the following week. But it's nice to see Craig again. I know that he's actually up in Eastern Canada right now scouting some good junior players. Craig's had quite a resume throughout his career. You know, he was one of the few Americans at that point in time to make the National Hockey League. The family history of the Patrick family is very rich. And, of course, he's won some championships with the Pittsburgh Penguins. And he's like a wise old owl. Nice to have him around, I can tell you that.
John, can you talk about your transition from the television booth to the management side of things and, you know, including what was the biggest challenge?
I think inexperience, mostly, but I was fortunate in that when I got to St. Louis and for the first time to be a team executive, you know, when I back it up, of course, doing all the hockey all those years on television, you really see the world of hockey and what it's all about. I also had the real pleasure and in a way very fortunate to be able to meet a lot of quality hockey people over the years and watched how franchises were run, et cetera. And then when I had the opportunity to go to St. Louis, I was pretty green, but Larry Plough was there, the general manager, and he's a very giving person. And we spent a lot of time, because we didn't really have a whole lot here to start with, to put on the ice. We had some future, but if the future wasn't ready. So we really went through it. Some interesting times, some very hard times, some great times, frustrating times. But it was when you go through all that stuff, you gain experience. And so that was the main thing, was the lack of experience. But I got it quickly because we had to learn on the job. We had 5,000 or 6,000 people in the stands at the time, and as I've always said, those were the best 5,000 or 6,000 people around because they were there through the bad times. And so we battled and found ways to get assets for the Blues to improve their future, and the future is now for them. It's a good hockey club. So it was just getting that experience is what it was all about.
We can speak to that, John. We were actually in St. Louis last April when you guys were playing the Sharks. The city was certainly excited about the team and about the team, both then in that series, but also you could see it in terms of the future.
Yeah, it was exciting. The arena here in St. Louis, when the fans go to it, it's somewhat like Winnipeg was this past winter. It becomes an event, and they had a lot of fun going to games. And the process of building an outfit through the draft primarily, and that's what we did in St. Louis, the fans had a real opportunity to come to the rink for a few years straight and watch the kids grow. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they were their own kids. And then when it starts to get towards fruition, they feel really good about it. And, yes, I think that they enjoy it. They love going to the building, having fun, all ages. And now you're seeing the team mature. There's going to be higher expectations on them, and there should be because it's a good hockey club. They're well coached now with Ken Hitchcock. Doug Armstrong, the GM, does a good job. So they're in a position to take another step. They have playoff experience behind them now. And they have got a lot of very, very, very good young players. And there's a lot of them coming, too. People like Schwartz and Raddy and Tarasenko and Yaska. There's a bunch of them. They're a good club.
John, when you and the Blues went your separate ways, was there any thought to returning to the television booth?
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do. I got to a point where you wondered about what it takes to do the job. Mm-hmm. And it's always nice. The one thing about television, if you do your job, it's hard work. A lot of people don't think it is, but it is. you're traveling around the country, you're just game after game after game. The last year I did television, I did 156 games during that season, and it was hard. But at the same time, you have your summers off, you get away from it, the whole thing. And in management, you don't really get away from it much. So I had to really weigh that and make that decision. I like to go out to British Columbia, to the East Kootenays, the Windermere Lake, Radium Hot Springs area. It's about an hour and a half southwest of Banff. We have a place there, and I enjoy it there. But I haven't gotten there much with this job. Right. So I had to weigh that. And then I weigh the fact that, you know, if you go to Columbus, which is a really good city, they have a great facility. They have every amenity you need to try to put together a team. They just need to get the team going. They have very strong ownership. And you look at it and you go, you know what? It's nice to be on the inside. It's nice to be part of something. It's going to be at times a rough ride. There's no question about that when you're starting low in the standings. But if you get there, it's sure satisfying. And I want to be part of that again. And I really like their ownership. And they were very kind to my family and myself. And again, it's a good city. It's the Midwest, very similar to St. Louis, very good, high quality of life. And it's not just about hockey, it's about life, too. It's, we all get older, and we should enjoy our lives. And I think Columbus will do that for us.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Columbus Blue Jackets President of Hockey Operations, John Davidson. JD, the Blue Jackets were a division rival for the St. Louis Blues, where you came from, of course. So, you know, you saw them six times a year, you know, minimum. You know, in terms of the Blue Jackets, what players surprised you with their on-ice ability?
Well, I tend to look at it as the positions with the club. I think their defense is their strength and their strong side of things. The future, too, when you look at their future, a young player like Murray, who plays out in Everett, who was a number two pick overall, I understand was outstanding last night. We had some people watching him play. You know, there's a bright future there. They have Moore and Erickson and Savard and other defensemen deep through the system, along with the five or six guys that are expected to start with the team. So I think that that's their strength. In goal, you look at Mason and you look at Bobrovsky and Curtis McElhinney, by the way, has had a great start in the American League. They're 4-1 at Springfield. He had a shutout last night. The main two guys, though, going in, I think are going to be better than what most people say. If this team can keep the puck out of the net, it'll give them a chance to compete. And when you do that, that's what you start with. Mason showed up prior to camp in the best shape of his career, a real commitment during the offseason, and that's a good thing because he needs that. And I think he has raw skills that will be able to show that he's a good goalie. He hasn't proven it in the last couple of seasons after the rookie of the year, but he's got it. Bobrovsky is one of the harder working goaltenders you'll ever meet. He's had a great start with the KHL over in Russia, and I expect good things out of him. And then up front, they're bigger than they used to be, especially after the Nash trade, getting Dubinsky and Isimov. The scoring will be an issue. It's going to have to be by a committee, and it's our job to, as an organization, to look at the strengths of the organization and see if you can move somebody to try to fill some of the holes you have. What we did in St. Louis, if you remember, we built up a lot of first-rounders, and they're some really good young talent, but not everybody can play. So you take a player like Lars Eller, and we moved him to Montreal for Halak. We moved Eric Johnson because of the depth of Petrangelo, and moved Eric Johnson for two players, getting Shattenkirk, a defenseman, back, and also Chris Stewart, who was going to be a very good player. Shattenkirk already is a very good player. So the idea along the way is to build your assets up as much as possible, and then in turn try to fill the needs that every team has.
John, before taking your current position, did you talk at all with Ken Hitchcock about Columbus? And if so, what did he have to say?
Yeah, Hitch is a guy who likes to play golf or hit balls. we would go to the range and hit balls next to each other there and just chat and talk. He liked Columbus. Unfortunately, he got let go there, but he stayed there and lived there for an additional year and a half before he was picked up by the Blues. And we talked a lot about his views on things. It doesn't make them right, but it's certainly good to hear people's ideas and what their thoughts are. He's a great guy to chat with, and and a fun guy to talk hockey with. He's one of the old school guys who could talk at 24 hours a day. He'd do 26 hours a day if there was 26 hours in a day. He just loves it. And I give him a lot of credit here in St. Louis. He's been involved with youth hockey and coaches and giving clinics and everything else during this lockout to keep busy. He's a good man. Yeah, you reach out. In this world of hockey, you build up relationships. And in turn, when you have things happening, you call people and you rely on their opinions. It helps you make decisions.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Columbus Blue Jackets President of Hockey Operations, John Davidson.
John, you know, when St. Louis came to Winnipeg last year, we saw them firsthand and saw, to me, one of the better transition teams in the league. And I think that starts in the back end with guys like Pietrangelo and Shattenkirk and just tremendous puck movers and speed. And you look at the team that you have now, and you alluded to it before, you know, the stronger core. And even in the past few months, you know, adding Jack Johnson and Ryan Murray and Tim Erickson, guys who can skate and move the puck. Do you see a lot of similarities there, and do you see the possibility of being a good transition team pretty quickly?
Well, I hope so. I mean, Jack Johnson was traded there, and I was interested from the outside, wondering how he was going to embrace going to Columbus. And he embraced it wholeheartedly, and I give him a lot of credit for that. He became their best defenseman. The Blues made a trade with Columbus, trading Nikitin to Columbus for Russell, and both players played better than I think both teams thought they would. Nikitin paired up with Fedor Tootin, so two Russians together. They were very good, very good. Wisniewski had a very difficult start last season with the suspension and injuries, so we expect more out of him. I just think that's the strength. And you're absolutely right. The idea is if you can't find a way to move it, you've got to be able to skate it. The vision, first pass, transition is what the game is about, no question. I remember that game at Winnipeg. Winnipeg played pretty good, if I remember. Wheeler was outstanding in that game. He must have had 12 scoring chances in that game. And I think, I'm trying to remember if it was Halak or Elliott. I can't remember who played.
I think that was Halak, I'm pretty sure.
Halak, yeah. He was outstanding, if I remember.
He was, yeah. 40
in
shots
that game, yeah. Yeah, and that was a game where I thought Winnipeg actually played pretty well, if I remember correctly.
They did, yeah.
Yeah, moving to the forward groups.
It was an overtime game too.
Yeah, I think it was an overtime. It was a Saturday afternoon game. That much
That's
I remember
right.
for
right.
sure.
Yeah.
Moving to the forward core, you know, the Blues were very had a lot of scoring by committee. There wasn't that one sort of superstar that they relied on. And now that the Blue Jackets have traded away Rick Nash, they're also seemingly going to embrace a scoring by committee until younger players like Johansson are ready to step up and take that next step forward. Can you compare the two forward groups between the Blues and the Blue Jackets?
That's a good question. That's a real good question. I think that what we expect with Columbus, the Blue Jackets, is a team that's going to be a forward group that's going to play heavy, physical, hard to play against. You know, Anisimov, Dubinsky, Foligno, a lot of the guys have size. There's new faces there, obviously, and I just named three of them, so you're going to need a process. Are they going to gel? Are they not going to gel? You hope they do, but you know, time will certainly tell us about that. But I think when you have a club that's going through a transition that we're going to have to go through, and I know my feeling is they were better than what they showed last year, the whole team. Mm-hmm. I think that you have to play a heavy game. You have to play a physical game, a responsible game defensively, a responsible game offensively, which leads to defense, a game that's fairly disciplined so you're not spending all day or all night in the penalty box, and find your scoring. Can the power play be something that you're going to lean on? We're going to have to figure a lot of this stuff out because there's a lot of new faces there. Johansson's playing right now in the American League, and he's going through a process of learning to play hard and learning to play with the way the pro game is. It's hard. The American League right now is a good league, mm-hmm. especially with a lot of the NHL players playing there. So it's going to be a feel our way. It's going to be a club that's going to try to find some forwards along the way here because we know that's what's needed mostly. And having three first-round draft picks coming up this next draft is going to be helpful. And we've got to make sure we hit on those and not miss. So it's going to be an adventure, but it should be fun.
John, as you're aware, you're well aware, a team's success can turn solely on the goaltending. And, mm-hmm. you know, the easily the biggest difference between now and your former club and your current one with all three netminders, you know, currently pending RFAs, is it possible that you might end, add a netminder when the season actually starts?
I don't know. I think we have to look and see what we have more than anything else. Mm-hmm. See where we go. See if one person jumps out and becomes your clear-cut number one. I know last draft this team went through a draft where they tried to add a lot of prospects in the goaltending position. One of them is Dansk, playing in Erie, getting a lot of work there for the Erie Otters. Saw him on television the other night. They beat the London team, which is a good team, and he was very good all the way through the shootout. They've got a big Finnish kid, Korpisalo, who I know the Blues looked at regarding the draft. I really liked him, but that's years down the road. So, I mean, both these guys that are there now are young guys. We'll just see how it goes, feel our way. I'd hate to have to trade a significant asset to get a significant goalie when we hope we have goalies already that can get the job done.
John, final question here. You know, you talked to some people around hockey last year, and some may have thought that the Blue Jackets were a little bit light on scouting, maybe especially over in Europe. Is that something that you're going to look into and possibly expand?
Well, the only thing I can tell you is I'm looking at everything from top to bottom, A to Z. I know they changed a lot of their amateur scouts after the last draft. They made significant changes to their roster of scouts. And my job is to come in there as president of hockey operations to analyze everything. There's not going to be a rush to judgment by any means. I think when you rush to judgment, you can make a lot of mistakes. I don't plan on doing that. So we're going to have to assess and take a good look at everybody and go from there. I know that the draft is huge for us. It's important. And I think, frankly, when you look at the Blues, the Blue Jackets' drafting record, it certainly could have been better.
John Davidson, new president of hockey operations of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon,
gang,
on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks, JD.
Have a great day, gang. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye. Thanks very much. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to John Davidson, president of hockey operations for the Columbus Blue Jackets. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You will also be able to access the interview on the TSN 1290 website, tsn1290.ca.
I just wanted to give a quick shout-out if I can. We've got great fans. Our boy Beller driving down to Grand Forks to watch UND tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Said he's listening to the show on the way there, so shout out to Beller.
And Dale Sawchuk as well, the Sawch, you can't miss him. He's doing what we suggested, which is he's watching the Bomber game.
Well, we don't suggest that.
Well, yeah, he's watching the Bomber game on TSN, and he's listening to us on TSN 1290. So the best of both worlds, a quick update from the Bomber game, start of the second half. It's a barn burner. It is 22-3 for the Tiger Cats, and Buck Pierce is out of the game and will not return with an upper body injury.
You know, on the topic of, you know, listening to something else while you're watching, I wouldn't suggest watching a live sporting event with something else on, because then it gets confusing.
Well, it gets confusing to watch the Bombers play.
It does a little bit, but
it's I think we're the bad. We must be the jinx. You know,
no, they lose every game, Drew.
Well, no, last week we weren't on, and they won, and they played well in Toronto. And then I think it was the week before that is when they were at home to Calgary when we were on, and they played poorly.
I think the jinx is just terrible quarterback play.
That's an interesting theory. Not that the defense is much better, really, for that
That's
matter.
True also,
anyways, it's a little bit of a struggle. Great interview by JD. You know, not a surprise, really, given that, you know, as a former TV guy, you know, he knows how to conduct those interviews and talk and everything. But he went deeper into his organization, both in St. Louis and in Columbus. You can see he's got a firm grasp of all the hockey operations.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he knows the prospects, and he knows the players, and he knows the future, and he knows three first-round picks for the Blue Jackets next year.
Well, it's like the Jets have six in the first two rounds, too.
And it's interesting. Remember, if there's no season this year, it's just a random draw.
Well, good point. But also, you know,
in terms of setting the list,
a listener of this show,
you still get your picks, right, but you're right, because remember, Crosby was the lottery. Remember, Montreal almost got Crosby. Remember that?
And they got Carey Price instead. Yeah,
right. So
but
that's
it was just
a
player.
And the Rangers went up and got stalled. But a listener of this show, Shale, who's in one of my hockey pools, I was talking to him yesterday at the bank, and he said, you know, remember this also for the veterans in terms of the negotiations. After the last lockout, you get 2 years of entry-level players coming up.
Right.
Cheaper contracts. What do you think that means for the older guys?
Not good.
No. Yeah, it means the older guy. Well, it's like we've said regarding the CBA. The older guys are the ones who really, the guys who are on the last years of their contract, the guys who are.
You have two, you know, every year you'll develop certain players to come up with entry-level deals. This year you got two in a row. You know, next year, if there's no season, you'll have two in a row.
That's right. And, I mean, if you're the Columbus Blue Jackets, and that draw, even the Jets, really, talking about the number of draft picks they have. If that lottery, if it is a lottery, I mean, if there's no season and it's just a random pulling of
Nathan McKinnon.
Of lotteries.
Seth Jones.
Well, yeah, you never, you know, it could change your organization for two decades.
And that's what happened to
Pittsburgh. I don't like it, though. Like, why should the best team have a, you know, what if Pittsburgh gets McKinnon?
Why should Pittsburgh get Nathan McKinnon?
Drew, I would tend to agree with Richie, and I think you're agreeing with Richie, too.
What's the alternative?
It should be a rollover. And basically, you whatever the
so you're
going to
give the Oilers yet another first overall pick?
No. You do a rollover and then a weighted, like you do 50-50, like based on the year before.
Right.
And like half just based on
it can't be based. Basically, the lottery is based on nothing.
Yeah, it's just put 30 balls
I'd wait it. I'd probably wait it more to a random than towards the year before, but some random. I mean, sorry, some waited the year before.
Well, in honor of David Stern, and he's retiring as NBA commissioner, will Gary Bettman freeze one of the envelopes in order to get Nathan McKinnon or Seth Jones on the teams they want?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because he's frozen the NHL season, Drew. So
nice.
Well played.
Yeah. That'll be interesting. I mean, I remember watching. I believe they held that lottery in Ottawa, if I'm not mistaken.
I remember.
Were you on the Hill?
I was living in Ottawa at the time, and I think
you were on the Hill.
I was in Gimli.
Paul Martin was in power?
I don't remember who was in power at that time. But if I recall correctly, I think I remember that they were
the Martin years.
Yeah. Be quiet, both of you.
Hey, wasn't it? It was more like the Martin months.
You know, a movie I watched that film class. My uncle teaches. I got to watch the Marx Brothers this week, Drew.
Groucho?
Is this going to be an old... Hang on. Let me just prepare myself for the age joke here. You know,
Marx Brothers, or as Drew would say, former classmates.
Could see that one coming from a mile away. You're nothing if not transparent.
Remember the time that we had a contest to guess your age and someone someone thought like you were actually in your 70s? We had to say, no, like Drew's 31, I'm 30, Richie's 29. Like we didn't, well, that's our current ages now, but...
No, they used 21.
It's funny. We have many problems, don't we?
You know what the biggest one is? It's a lack of hockey to watch. That's the biggest problem.
I mentioned this earlier in the show. I watched some MJHL hockey, but
yeah, you did.
You know, and we mentioned that our longtime listener Beller's watching UND. But I mean, there's still hockey out there. You've got Brandon Wheat Kings. You've got the MJHL, MMJHL, University of Manitoba.
Ezzy and I are actually planning to go see a Brandon game, and in the middle of planning, Ezzy just passed out.
Right, but no, I mean.
That, by the way, that goes to your costume tonight.
Yes, I'm going as a beer bottle tonight to your Halloween party.
So can we bottle you?
No. You can actually use me to bottle myself.
Okay. But, I don't know what's going on here.
What about Ezzy and I? Ezzy and I, our costumes are going to be pretty good.
Are you going to release
Ezzy and me. What?
You're going to release it to the general public?
Let's do it.
Richie's going to go as, well, you know we're going to Minneapolis in 3 weeks to see the boss. Richie's going to go as Bruce Springsteen. I'm going to go as Steven Van Zandt.
That's good. I mean, the two of you couldn't be more washed up, so yeah, it works perfectly for both of you.
Bruce isn't washed up, though.
I know. Did Drew just say the boss is washed up?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, I didn't.
The boss.
People off air don't realize that you make us call you the boss when we're not on the radio.
It's true.
We just call Drew washed up. He's not the boss.
I demand respect at all times.
Oh, man.
Why don't we go to break?
We have planned for the segment anyhow.
I think it was actually written down as the segment that you make fun of my age.
Well,
if that wasn't a filler segment, I don't know what was.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus is now in the chair, trading off from producer Tim. We're the only show that needs two producers, let me tell you. That's right. How big we are.
Remo.
We're glad you're able to make it for 2 o'clock, Remo.
I was here at 12:30 with Candy.
Allegedly.
Guys, I think we need a transition. We need to get some fresh fruit and vegetables. I mean, I'm already 220 pounds. If I keep eating like this, I'm going to be bigger than Buff. They're gonna start to say that they're actually gonna say Buff doesn't look too bad because Ezra's about 250. Buff's gonna trim down a little bit.
I could get a vegetable platter for next time.
Yeah, we should do that. Some vegetable, maybe just get some avocados. You know, just some nice fresh vegetables.
Avocado's
mango,
a fruit.
Yeah.
Veggies and dip.
Whoa.
Some apple slices.
Avocado's a fruit,
isn't it?
It's a vegetable.
How's a fruit?
Is it? Tomatoes.
I'm not sure by the letter of the law what it is, but we can look that up. Anyways, you can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, the Oilers Arena saga.
Yep.
And it is a saga. It takes another bit of a strange, curious, raise-an-eyebrow sort of twist this week when we find out that Edmonton Oilers owner Daryl Cates made, and his family... So it's not just him.
It's a fruit.
But it's... Avocado's a fruit? Okay.
His, not Daryl Cates.
His family and his employees made $300,000 in donations to the Premier of Alberta's political party. This is the same premier that has refused to give a dollar towards the new arena that Daryl Cates wants to be built.
But... Well, there's an indirect fund that the city can use from the province.
Yes. Right. There's a infrastructure projects fund that the province, $100 million that the province has given to the city saying, use it for infrastructure. You know, which sort of, I mean, yeah, they are technically contributing to it, but it's not a direct line item transfer.
That's correct.
You know, as a, if you want to go into the financial world. Is it possible that Daryl Cates is the PR of this is just getting worse by the minute? Do you first of all, let me ask you this. Do you think that this stinks a little bit?
Yeah.
And secondly, you know, as Daryl Cates, have you ever seen anybody botch an arena quite like Daryl Cates is doing?
No, it's pretty bad. Well, it's pretty bad, especially because they basically wouldn't give it to him.
And they pretty much had a deal in place.
That's right.
But he wanted, I mean, he went for the Hail Mary and wanted an even more extravagant arena that's
exactly right.
Questionable how necessary it was.
A little bit more free. The issue here is, you know, the rule in Alberta is you can't make more than a $30,000 donation.
On a per-person basis, right.
Like, the weird part is, you know, they said that he made donations, which is fine. He made donations for, you know, himself, his mom, his dad, all that stuff. That doesn't, you know, that could be a little bit fishy, but less fishy if you give them the money and then they make the donation. But actually what happened is he just gave the big check to the... To the PCs there.
Yeah.
And then they cut up and decide where it goes. So
here's a check for $300,000.
Yeah.
Here's a check for $300,000 from Daryl Cates, but it's not only from Daryl Cates. It's from Daryl Cates and 9 family members and employees.
Now, you have less of an issue with this, of course, if there's no indirect tie to the arena funding. By letter of the law, you might have an issue with it anyhow, but it's more so by the indirect benefit of the arena funding that comes along.
Especially if 3 months down the road from now, the way this arena impasse is settled is if all of a sudden the province comes to the table with more than the $100 million that is in this...
They almost can't now.
Well, if they do that now, they're just courting scandal, really, I would suspect. I mean, you know, it just seems... It would be too suspicious, and it would be an obvious quid pro quo that no amount of time in between is going to eliminate.
QPQ.
Yeah.
I think absolutely that in this situation, Daryl. First off, it's been bad for. We've talked about this for the last few months. It's really bad because he's asking for the $6 million subsidy, and from what I understand, I was going to say a guy that's been covering this, a writer that we've had on a bunch of times on this show is David Staples of the Edmonton Journal. He's been writing about this almost on a daily basis. He's a good guy to read as far as this goes. But as far as I'm concerned, there is going to be an issue with his political ties. It's the Wild Rose Party? No, it's the PC Party.
PC Party.
So if he's been giving contributions and he's asking for that subsidy, and that subsidy is going to have to come from, like Richie said, this infrastructure fund that comes from the city of Edmonton, but it's funded by the province, there's going to be some type of issue there. And in reality, he's got to come down, and what he's asking for is, you know, we've talked, you know, made a little bit of, you know, jokes about this, but this $400 million arena, there's some type of skywalk, or there's another word for it, that connects the downtown and development that's going to happen in Edmonton. I haven't seen the plans for it, but there's some issue here with the amount of money and the cost of the project. Now, Daryl Cates is a very wealthy guy, and he's asking for more money from the government when he's already getting it.
The problem with these arenas that are being built, I mean, this one less so, is that they're really shooting for the moon unnecessarily when they could. There's a It's like the NHL and the NHLPA. There's a deal to be made.
That's exactly right.
Stop shooting for the moon and get your deal done.
But again, well, Drew, both issues, as you started to interrupt there, both issues are simple. What's the answer?
Well, if you're trying to build a $400 million arena, the
only thing, obviously money.
Greed,
there's enough, the fan base, and you know, again, David Staples, I've been following his work on Edmonton Journal. He's been writing about this. And, you know, Daryl Cates is saying, well, we're one of the smallest market teams. Well, in fact, the Edmonton Oilers, despite the fact they haven't made the playoffs for 6 years, their fans have continued to show up, and they're actually, in fact, in the top half.
And to his
credit, but they're one of the top half revenue generating teams.
But to his credit, he puts it all back in the team. Yeah. Spends a ton of money.
Oh no, absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, to cry we're small market if we don't get a $400 million arena when you're a guy that owns Rexall and is worth billions of dollars.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think Edmonton is a small market.
No, neither is Winnipeg. Just the size of the city; it's how much money you're bringing in.
Exactly, and that's you're 100% right. The population might be small. The population base might be small.
Right.
But a small market team, to my estimation, is a team that does not generate large amounts of revenue.
Two million.
You're right.
Populated city.
Yeah.
As compared to a 600,000 person populated city with 400,000 diehard hockey fans willing to spend their money, as opposed to 100,000 and 2 million.
You're right. It doesn't matter if, you know, if it's great if you have 2 million people in your city, but if there's 20 hockey fans, you're a small market. You have to work.
Look at Florida, Atlanta, Phoenix. I mean, come on. Big cities.
They're huge cities. I mean, they're absolutely, but they have no interest in,
that's right.
I mean, until their team is good, they have no interest in being a large market hockey city. The Winnipeg Jets are a, look at the revenue they generate. Look at the revenue that Edmonton generates. Look at the revenue that Calgary generates. These are, I mean, just big generating revenue teams.
True, for Daryl Cates to compare himself, Edmonton and Winnipeg is fine. They're cities with similar populations.
Yeah, similar.
But the MTS Center was built, 15,000 fans.
That's right.
It was built for an AHL franchise, and people were, you know.
And built for like $150 million, wasn't it?
Right, and it's the 19th busiest venue in North America. It's a fantastic arena for concerts. They, you know, the Jets have been a huge success. They sold out season tickets, and they're going to have sellouts for the near future. You can't say that, okay, we're like the Jets, we need more government money, and then ask for a $400 million arena, when really, realistically, you could probably get by on a $250 million arena. Because the MTS Center was built for, you know, in between $130 and $150 million. So even if that was 8 years ago, that doesn't translate to triple. I mean, he's asking for a very ambitious project.
And he's also asking for a very ambitious project that he doesn't want to really fund himself, and he's a billionaire. You know,
right.
If you want to be this ambitious, it's, you know, it's really a lot of nerve. You know, I want this over-the-top huge arena, but I'm not going to contribute to it as, you know, even though, but the standard arena that would certainly do the job and serve my purpose, I don't want.
There's concerns.
So I either want the moon or I want nothing at all.
How does the deal get done? I mean, he's got to take down, he's got to limit his, you know,
the lease terms,
conditions, because at this point in time, especially after this leaks, any movement on the other side is going to be very fishy.
And Richie, what he's concerned about is that Edmonton, when Edmonton was having problems, remember, Edmonton was, you know, in the mid-90s, late-90s, Edmonton was having big-time problems with the Edmonton Investors Group. Sure. And then, obviously, you know, they went to the Cup Finals in 05-06 after the lockout, and they've been very successful. But he's worried that down the road there might be some issues. But, I mean, okay.
But there's no basis for that worry
Not at all. Edmonton's a very strong hockey market.
Of course it is. It takes, you know, in this day and age, for the general public to turn against an owner and side with politicians, especially the owner of your hockey team, which they love their hockey team more than anything else, you have to really misplay your hand. And, you know, granted, we're not on the ground in Edmonton, but from everything we read and can understand, it seems the public has really turned against Daryl Cates in how he's handled this and are siding with the city council. And I think his name, the mayor there, is Mayor Mandel, if I'm not mistaken. It's true. I think his name is Stuart Mandel.
Stephen or Stuart Mandel.
Yeah, something like that.
Stephen
Mandel. Thank you, Remus.
He's a relative of Remus's.
Yeah, and the public is, you know.
Just kidding.
The public seems to side with him and say, Daryl Cates, look how poorly you're handling this and continue to handle this poorly.
And you know what the worst part of this is? The Oilers are absolutely stocked with young prospects, and the future has never looked, I mean, you go back to the Gretzky years, the future hasn't looked this good in a long time. So, I mean, bring down your expectations, you know, your ambitions a little bit here. Build the arena for a little bit less, and I mean, he's still going to make a lot of money here. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, there's really, you know, all of his problems have been made by himself. Because everyone wants the new arena. In Edmonton, they know that Rexall, the old Northlands Coliseum, it's time for a new arena. Everybody agrees on this.
If he gives $30,000 and just from him, that's it, is there an issue?
If he personally gives it?
Yeah.
No.
I'm surprised he only gave it to one party. I mean, you know, going back to my political days, most polls and pundits, and they were proven to be quite wrong. When the Alberta provincial election happened, the PCs weren't expected to stay in power.
The reason why I know, yeah.
The Wild Rose Party was expected to win all the polls, which were proven to be quite false, had the Wild Rose Party going to be elected in power. So I'm surprised he would only gave money to the PCs. If you're Daryl Cates and you really want to play this, if you want to play the political game at the same time, you should have given money to everybody, I would think.
Then that kind of leans in his favor, does it not?
Well, maybe he's...
If the consensus party was the one who was going to win and was going to have control of this, maybe he didn't anticipate them winning. Obviously, he pushed them, gave them money to help them try and win.
Right. But, maybe it's not directly tied to the arena. Maybe it's, true, that's his political beliefs, and I frankly don't know the answer. But
connecting the dots, though, Drew, you can look at it from both ways. If you gave $300,000, you broke it up. Okay, fine, whatever. But I guess the question is, in terms of the province and the city, who's pulling the strings and how's that decision being made? And can you tie all those dots together?
Right.
And I don't think it's as easy as, A equals B, B equals C, A equals C. You know what I mean? I don't think it's like that. I think it's a little bit different.
That's a little introduction to logical reasoning in undergraduate university, Richie, right there.
I hear where you're coming from, Richard, and I don't know the answer, and we'll see how this plays out. It's like anything else. That arena deal should have been done and wrapped up a long time ago, but it's been botched so poorly by Daryl Cates that it's now, I think, a legitimate question. Is there going to be a new arena in Edmonton, and or I think will Daryl Cates,
he just needs to
will Daryl Cates be the owner of the Oilers at that time?
Well, I think so. I think the issue is really only $100 million they've allotted right now. It's fine, really. The issue is if there's a bump here to get it done. That's where I think the issue arises.
Well, they've supposedly, posturing is that they've pulled everything off of the table from the city. But, that's posturing. Just you can pull something off the table just as easily as you can put it back on the table.
That's true.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
Yeah, Reem playing a little DJ Skrillex. Who is this?
It's Barbra Streisand by Duck Sauce coming at you on CFRW.
Duck Sauce.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
What Drew had for dinner last night, Duck Sauce.
You can follow us on Twitter @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.IllegalCurve.com.
Terrible.
An update from Hamilton.
The Bombers, I've heard this song before. So
get Timmy back in here, Rich.
Bombers have scored a touchdown 25-10.
The whole thing just goes... Barbra Streisand. That's not a song.
Put some levels on, Reem.
This is a song?
I don't know. My mom's at Barbra Streisand tonight in Chicago. I thought I'd play it in tribute.
Oh, that's nice.
Is Barbra Streisand going to play this song?
No.
Okay.
Not the same thing.
Barbra Streisand's terrific.
Hockey Canada has unveiled a new concussion app. Yeah. It's a smartphone app, I guess, that allows, hockey coaches and hockey personnel.
Parents,
to look for the symptoms of concussions and evaluate their, the situation accordingly. It's endorsed by Sidney Crosby. To me, this is a pretty intelligent unveiling of an app by Hockey Canada. Very proactive. Mm-hmm. It's something simple that everybody can look at. Everybody has a smartphone. You just download it to your BlackBerry, your iPhone, or whatever your smartphone of choice is. I think, again, this is Hockey Canada's way of sort of being ahead of the curve, and that the NHL really would be wise to also emulate this in some respect.
Hockey Canada is more concerned about the well-being. NHL is more concerned about lawsuits and then the well-being.
Richie, see, I think this new concussion app is great, but the problem I'm going to have is when these youth hockey players are skating around and they have their iPod and their iPod or their iPad in their hands, and the pass comes to them, and in the middle of the ice, and they're on their iPad, using the touchscreen technology, isn't that going to create more concussions?
again, I don't think the kids themselves are going to be using the app. I think it's their parents.
Oh, right, or well, they'll be using it when they're off the ice,
yes,
not on the ice.
Generally,
okay.
Probably
I misread.
Not,
I misread.
Yeah, while they're not skating, but it is a fair comment you bring up. And
no, it's not.
Good
it pretty,
contribution.
It was pretty idiotic, but no. This is really good, and we were talking about this off air. On the Rona Roundtable this week, when they were at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe, they had Keith Primo on their show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a guy that his career was cut short by injuries. And obviously, you know, the Chris Pronger and Mark Savard. But you know what? We've always said that it's going to trickle down from the NHL down to minor hockey, everything that happens. And you got to embrace this technology. I mean, this is something that you're right. They are trying to be ahead of the curve. The simple matter is obviously hockey's played on the ice, and we're joking around, but you know kids are on their iPads and on their iPhones and stuff like that. To me, I'm not sure if there's a plan to do this. Something like this should be almost mandatory and given to all kids. Like when you sign up for hockey, you get this. I hope there's some type of program like that. So you know they really get.
I don't
this
know
out
if the
there.
Kids need it as much as the parents.
Well,
the coaches
you know
need
both.
This is
both.
One, this is one step though. Like you know, you watch NFL last week, for example, Sunday Night Football. There's one big block. And then the cameras show it 10 times, and then on SportsCenter or whatever, you see it 10 more times.
Yep.
And you're creating a culture of...
You're glorifying
the concussion. Well, so this is a small part in a big problem.
Richie, you're getting a little into the sociology of sport here.
I
like it.
I think the television networks have a huge problem here, is that they continue to show the big hits. You know, the top 10 plays of the league. Well, it's not. You know, especially if it's a dirty hit.
Especially, right. I agree with you. I think there is a difference between showing a clean... I mean, even if it's damaging, a clean hit... versus a dirty hit, and they often will replay a dirty hit. You know, how many times Darius Hayward Bay of the Oakland Raiders early in the season when he got concussed and knocked unconscious in the end zone? How many times did you see
many
that replay? They showed it as many times as possible. Look
and
at how
look,
terrible
they
this
look
is.
Macho, and they look macho. Yeah, and the guy's dancing around after, and I mean it happens in hockey too.
The guy's preening. Look at me. How great I am. Meanwhile, you know, Darius Hayward Bay is unconscious on the ground, and you know. Who does the average fan or the kid want to emulate? They obviously want to emulate Darius. They want to emulate the defensive back that knocked him out cold. You know, we have to stop, you know, sorry to get preachy
but that gets on my soapbox.
But
it's glorified in every way. I mean, you look at a guy like Rodney Harrison.
Sure.
Talking NFL again. A guy who was really good safety, but really dirty.
He went for the head.
And he talked a lot. And what happens?
Well, absolutely. He went for
a television job.
He went for the head at a time when really you were allowed to go for the head.
Right.
The rules weren't in place where about defenseless receivers as they currently are in the NFL to a lesser extent in the NHL. No hits to no blindside hits to the head. It's all the same. But sport, I mean, you know, it's like drug testing in the Olympics. The drugs are always going to outpace the testing. The attitude is always going to outpace the concussion.
Right. You have a better chance of changing the attitude than changing the drugs. So.
But Richie mentioned the culture of sport, right? And, you know, me personally, I love the physical aspect of hockey and
so
the hitting and
well,
the fighting
sure.
and all that.
It's not the dirty
but
stuff.
Things like this are a good step to improving that culture. Because, you know, Richie and I coached hockey. We've all played hockey in this room. And, you know, hockey can get very aggressive. There can be guys that are laid out and, you know, there's dirty hits and all that. They're taking the right steps, and they're nowhere near where they have to be. I mean, these when Keith Primo comes out with a book, I believe he co-authored a book about concussions, and you have other former hockey players and executives writing books about concussions in hockey. This is all good, you know. And again, for something like this, I see you know Hockey Canada releasing this app, and I think it's good because you want to stay, you know, stay
for
in,
sure.
in
yes.
at the same pace of technology. But something like this, I hope that the plan is, I was just looking at the article, they are going to make it available free for parents and kids on their Hockey Canada website. But I hope that they almost take it a step further and make it mandatory for coaches,
yes,
you know, kids, everything. Because let's be honest here. I mean, everybody knows what a concussion is. You're trying to reduce concussions in a calculated way. You're trying to take out the headshots. You're trying to take out the hits from behind.
It's coaches and parents hand in hand, like you know, through our experience too coaching. But some players you'll have where the parent wants the kid to play and the coach doesn't. In the other situation, you know, the coach wants them to play, not the parent.
They should all be on the same page
exactly.
and be able to identify either a concussion, because let's be honest, when you're talking about minor hockey, mm-hmm. you don't have a concussion room and a staff of eight doctors looking at a kid. You have to know.
Exactly right.
You have to know. Okay. First off, I don't know even if a lot of coaches, Drew, now know, okay, if a kid gets hit, what are the signs to see if the kid might be suffering a concussion? I honestly don't, you know, as someone who coached, you know, I don't necessarily know that if I know
did
that.
You,
so.
Did you ever think any of the kids you coached yep. suffered a concussion?
Yep.
A few times.
Just shut them down.
From based hits? From big hits?
Oh, for sure.
And did you hesitate to keep that kid on the bench?
No.
How did you know when it was okay to put that kid back on the ice, though?
Usually keep him out for the rest of the game.
So that was just sort of your internal coaching rule, for lack of a better word?
And again, that's using common sense.
These are kids.
I mean, that's common sense.
I mean, your kids. How old were the kids you guys were coaching? I think
they were 12.
I coached with Ezzy, and it was 14, and I coached 12s.
I was off by a
couple. 12s.
Were they
12? Were they 14? You were 12.
They were 12.
What about the parents? Did the parents? So after the game, you know, why haven't you played?
Speaking, the parents were good about that in terms of the concussion stuff. I understood. Some would probably defer to the kids a little bit and say, "Oh, you know, next game he can play." When maybe I wasn't so sure. And there's issues there. I mean, if you don't think a kid can play and the parent thinks he can play, that's what I'm talking about. Are you going to walk up to parents and say your kid's not playing? It's a tough situation.
I think
he or she sees the kid more than you do.
I think that, you know, for example, the stop program, the stop signs on the back of kids' jerseys, it's got to be across the board.
They should wear in the NHL, too.
And we've said that on the show years ago, that the NHL should put those stop signs up there.
And I would not argue with you. Put a stop sign on the guy's back. Who cares?
What's the downside?
There's no downside.
Besides making yourself seem proactive.
Remus was at Carboni yesterday, and all the girls were wearing stop signs.
Besides seeming proactive, and also, I mean, you know, even for professionals, if it says stop sign, they're going to think twice about
pulling up and not driving the guy. It's also the picture. It's like the picture that the standstill from Getty Images of a guy going to plow a guy through the boards with the stop sign sitting right there.
Yeah.
The optics.
That's right. And I mean, and for a league that's always really in desperate need of as many good optics as they can, I don't see why they would say no. Who says no to that?
And to Hockey Canada's credit, it's that, speaking of well-oiled machines, I mean, you talk about how everything is related and their relationship with the NHL and the CHL. I mean, I think it could only help if this is rolled out, and they've done a good job of rolling it out, obviously, but if it's made mandatory and, you know, everybody's got to have this, and maybe not even just Canada, everybody.
What do you guys think that Barbara Streisand think about concussions?
She doesn't really play as full impact of a concert as she used to, I think.
This is a little chronic 2001 ream.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I liked it better when you were playing that Barbara Streisand, whatever it was.
Welcome. This is classic.
Shake that body.
I know what it is. Yeah. Nobody wants to see me shake my body, let me tell you.
This is CNC Music Factory.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. And the website for all your latest Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock, and Michael Remus.
NHL news and notes.
Not very many news and notes going on, let me tell you.
It's a good segment.
But there's a few little bits and pieces we can get to.
Hey, the Islanders moved to Brooklyn.
We already did that one.
Hey, Columbus hired Davidson.
We did that one for about an hour. Yeah. So next week, it's a different NHL team is going to need to hire a new president. We'd really appreciate that.
Well, no, the U.S. will have a president by then.
Yeah, we have the U.S. Well, the U.S.
No, that's the week after.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever. Who cares?
Bruce Boudreau. Current head coach of the Anaheim Ducks, former head coach of the Washington Capitals, said in an interview on NHL.com or with NHL.com that he did not want to see the Washington Capitals win last year.
Yep.
Are you surprised that he would come out and say that? You don't often hear that from a spurned head coach.
No, A, because that's probably what most people would think. B, because Boudreau basically says what he thinks. So I'm not surprised by it. I like it, actually. Be honest. That's what most people think. It's like when Carlisle got fired in Anaheim. You think you want Anaheim to make a run and make the playoffs? Of course not.
Yeah, well, especially if you didn't leave how you wanted to leave. I mean, Bruce Boudreau left.
Nobody ever leaves. You know, the way they want to leave.
Well, okay, so then most.
Drew, talk to us after the show. By the way, we have some things to discuss.
Am I out?
You're being replaced by Bruce Boudreau. I mean, let's put it this way. Then, I mean, sometimes you leave a situation and it's a little bit. The breakup is a little bit worse than.
That's true.
You know, I've had bad breakups. I've had makeups. But it's usually always bad, the breakup part. So I'm not a little surprised about that. And, you know, obviously he got on his feet quickly in Anaheim. So
it's a classic case of asking a guy to be honest, and the guy's honest, and then they blow it out of proportion.
Right.
Well, nobody really blew it out of proportion. This isn't a big story. I'm just surprised. How often do you hear somebody really speak that honestly in professional sports?
It's great. It's refreshing.
Of course it's
only
refreshing.
Only when Biznasty's on OTR.
Oh, man. That guy.
You know. And the problem is he'll have a job in the NHL a lot longer than he, quote-unquote, deserves to have a job in the NHL, because somebody will keep hiring him to be their fourth-line player and create hits for their website and create a buzz for their team.
Well, with his 300,000 Twitter followers, Twitter should hire him as their senior president or something. Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not. Nicholas Backstrom is playing in the KHL.
Sacrilegious.
Okay. I knew
99?
He's wearing number 99 in the KHL. I knew your answer.
I'll save that for my end of... But I'll give you a quick comment now.
Okay.
Sacrilegious.
I suspect this is your jeer that's going to be at the end of the show.
Sacrilegious. You don't wear that number. You never wear that number in any league, especially in a professional league, or at least it pretends to be, like the KHL. This is offensive. I'm personally offended.
You're personally offended?
Personally offended.
Really?
Wearing number 99. You just don't do that.
The reason why you don't, and you don't wear 99 or 66 in hockey, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
88 is fine, but even 88. I mean, just pick, there's 90, how many numbers? What's 0 to 99? 99? There's 99 numbers.
You did not just ask there's that on air.
There's 99 numbers.
Oh, boy.
My dad's a retired math prof, by the way. Pick another one of the 97 numbers. Just pick another number. Pick 96 or something.
If you want to be that unique and you want to make a buzz, be number 101.
The reason why Backstrom wears 19, again, if you read the article, I forget where the article was.
I don't care what he
says. 19 was gone, 91 was gone, so he picked 99. Okay, fine, but it's 99. I mean, it's the great one. I mean, you know people are going to make comments about it, right?
Well, we
you
are.
Just know. Well, no, everybody's going to even in Finland and everywhere. Everybody knows who Gretzky is.
That's right.
You're going to get the comments. You know, what are you doing?
It's like the guy. I think the article. The guy who wears it in the beer league. You make fun of him.
Yeah,
exactly.
There's always the jerk. The jerks in beer league are the ones who wear the obvious numbers that are ha 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 funny.
And for that matter, you shouldn't wear 23 in basketball either.
Basketball, the number is less prestigious, though.
What?
Like LeBron wears 23, and like.
LeBron switched to 8 when he went to Miami.
Oh, it's like when
six now.
No,
six.
MJ went from 23 to 45.
That was
right.
That was
but
for
the
what,
point
a year
is
and a half, though.
The point is if you wear that number, people are going to say, "Oh, see the thing with what happens in hockey is everybody's seen this. The kid wears 99 and go, "Oh, you think you're the best on the team."
That's right. 99 is like sexier too, you know?
Yeah.
There are certain
Richie knows sexy too.
Well, let me ask you this. If 99 is sacred, why isn't 9 sacred?
Of
nine is sacred.
Or Bobby Hall
remember
or
what happened with Bobby Hall and Evander Kane? He had to ask permission.
Yeah, well, he had to ask
for
Bobby Hall.
Who has all the records?
Well, I mean, I know Gretzky's got all the records, but I mean, you know, look, I agree that 99 is, you know, he shouldn't wear 99. But, you know, why do we declare one number to be sacred and not the other number?
The best of all time. It's easy.
It's pretty simple.
Every record.
You know what? These guys can... Well, in the NHL, you can't wear 99, but in these other leagues...
Well, is there any... Aside from etiquette, is there anything really stopping him from wearing 99 in the NHL?
No.
You will never see a guy wear 99 in the NHL.
Like,
I will guarantee that.
Is there anything stopping you from double-dipping the chip tonight?
I plan to double-dip the chip tonight.
Aside from etiquette.
I don't subscribe to etiquette.
Well, there you go. Now there's Nicholas Backstrom.
You're actually pretty...
He double-dipped the number 9.
...guy, Drew. I know you're just saying that for pomp.
But. Let me ask you this. You know... This is sort of not directly related to this, but you know the Winnipeg Jets have announced, really, when they first came back, that they were not going to ever retire numbers. They were going to honor numbers, but they weren't going to retire them.
You mean like from 1.0, right?
No. The Winnipeg Jets 2.0, when they have players...
And I don't like that, by the way.
What do you mean? Like when they have a really good player, they're never going to retire numbers?
They're going to honor that player with in a ring of honor, but that his number will still be available to be used by future generations.
Yeah, I actually don't remember hearing that, but...
You can take my word for it, as
I thought it was just for Jets 1.0 numbers.
That's what I thought it was.
Mm. Even so, I don't like it.
It wasn't for future players, was it? I don't know why they would mention that now anyways.
Well, to get it on the record. So
as far as I'm concerned, 9 should be retired and Kane shouldn't be wearing it. Kane shouldn't probably be wearing it anyhow, but 9 should be retired.
Kane shouldn't be wearing any number.
Well, no, but 9, it just is like it's kind of like, again, it's like a
double
little bit,
zero.
It's not the number 99, but it's like sacrilegious in terms of, to me, here in this.
That's Bobby Hall.
Yeah. It should be enough. Did Doug Smell wear it after the fact, after Hull, or whatever it may be? I don't remember. But I just know that 9, to me, should be honored. Because without, again, with Hull and asking and all that stuff, you wouldn't have a team. And you know, eventually Solani.
Well,
what does it kill you to have five, Hedberg Nielsen, does it kill you to have 5, 6, 7 numbers retired and honor your past? I don't think so.
But So you don't think it's enough that they just put the player up in the ring of honor?
No, I think it's different.
What's this ring of honor? In sports, you hang jerseys from the rafters. It's this ring of honor.
Well, they have ring of honors in football all over
the
place.
I don't like it.
You hang the guy's jersey from the rafters.
That's right.
Why? Don't need to change that tradition.
I agree.
Okay. You guys are just... That's why I asked. Thought it would stir some good conversation up.
No, it did. It did. We're stirring.
The KHL canceled their two Brooklyn games. They were Dynamo Moscow and SKA St. Petersburg were scheduled to play at the Barclays Center January 19th and 20th. They canceled those games really... I think probably due to a lack of interest.
They say they didn't want to take it from the Russian cities, but you can't believe anything the KHL says. You have to wonder if the sales were any good. You have to wonder if this new decision to move the team to Brooklyn is a deciding factor. A lot of things here, but the KHL, you have the lack of transparency is laughable. So you'll never know the answer.
Why did they wait till right after the
classic,
Islanders?
Classic. Well, that's exactly the timing is very suspicious. But the KHL overall is suspicious. Apparently, they were trying to get Medvedev out of there and hire one of, what's his name, Putin's buddies to run the league.
Medvedev as the president of the league.
That's the other rumor.
Well, that would be interesting. I mean, Putin, wants to, keep power on all sorts of different areas in Russia. But, the KHL, I think that's what they're lacking until they, is that really... aura of legitimacy. There's still going to be that Russian oligarch suspicious. Nothing's really on. You're never so sure what you're seeing in
the KHL. That's right.
You know what? There's some good hockey being played in the KHL. There's a lot of NHLers that are obviously playing there. Vander Kane, Pavlik. No, Pavlik's in the Czech League, isn't he? No, he's in the KHL.
No, he's not. He's not.
Is he in the Czech League?
He's in the Czech League. Yeah.
There you go. I don't think there's a lot of appetite for... KHL hockey is an exhibition sport in North America. We want to watch the NHL. If not, we'll watch junior hockey. I mean, I think you're going to get more people to watching, Canadian World Junior Hockey at the MTS Center than you would, Dynamo Minsk play. Nothing against that. Yeah. It's just for them to think that, this is somehow a big deal isn't. I mean, it's a good league, but it's nowhere near the NHL, in my opinion, the way it's run or the quality of hockey. That's my opinion, but.
Every time you say something, you don't have to say it's your opinion. People sort of know that it's your opinion.
That's true.
Unless you're giving out a fact.
I hope it isn't somebody else's opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
Guinness, what's your opinion?
It's my opinion.
What is your opinion?
On the KHL?
On the whole canceling the games.
Of the NHL games or the KHL games?
KHL games in Brooklyn.
Are you listening here?
I'm listening.
All right.
I don't even sure what you're talking about. I will go back to Backstrom. He said that let me rewind.
Smokes.
Hey, I had to get to weigh in.
This isn't an editorial.
Woke up at 12. Give him a break.
Go ahead.
Look, it's a KHL. The NHL rules don't apply there.
No, 99 applies to every league.
In football, too?
No, not football.
Every hockey league?
Yeah.
He said they didn't have enough numbers for him. That was his reasoning.
Oh, well, yeah. Can I pull 96 out? Can I pull 95 for honor of Pavel Bure?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Fine, then back to the KHL games in Brooklyn. They said they didn't want to move these important end-of-season games.
Yeah, you believe that?
I don't know.
Why does the KHL season end in January?
No, they have these breaks.
Yeah, they are. I was reading the King of Russia book. I learned a lot about the KHL schedule. Yeah. You got a lot of breaks in there. You play one team, and you play every team in a certain order on the way up, and then the way down you play them in the reverse order.
Finally reading the book I gave you. That's Eric DeHatrick book, by the way.
Great book.
King of Russia.
About Dave King's time in Russia. Yeah. We've spoken about it on the show a number of times.
Yeah.
Wrapping up news and notes with this one, Ryan Miller, made a statement regarding the lockout. And I thought it was actually a pretty intelligent statement, given some of the other comments we've heard from some lesser intelligent players. Just placing the blame where it belongs on both sides. Do you think Ryan Miller will receive any backlash for not really towing the party line, per se?
Nope. I think he's respected enough that he can say what he wants, And I think what he said was articulate and true, most of all. And I think if he's saying it, I bet you a lot of people he's been talking to, and you can bet he's been talking to a lot of other players, share the same sentiment.
If all these players are out there sharing this sentiment, when do they make their move, for lack of better
expression?
When
the season's about to get canceled.
I just don't
not till then?
I don't think
Probably
any
not.
Of this helps. I mean, it's fine, okay? These guys are making these comments. Another guy that was making comments, part of the NHLPA negotiating committee, was David Backes. And you've got the other guys that we've talked about. I mean, how many guys do you need, speaking here? How many guys need to be tweeting
about that? That's what he wants, though. That's what Farrah wants. He wants people talking.
But I think that
it's too much.
I think we've said on this program that we think that's going to end up backfiring against them.
We do.
Right, because they've lost the PR battle since the beginning of this.
Well, I mean, not the PR battle so much, but eventually a player is going to say something so inflammatory and so detrimental to the union's cause.
Something confidential, probably.
That the NHL will take advantage of it and say, look, they're splitting up. There's tensions in the ranks, and things are going to blow up, and the NHLPA will not be a unified body for much longer.
Probably. I agree with that. Remo, what's your costume?
I went as Andrew WK.
Oh, tonight.
Same thing as yesterday.
You know what?
Oh, the costume repeat.
You want me to come up with...
Drew's actually going as Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah.
Is he? That's a good costume.
No. I'm not going as Andrew Dice Clay.
Look, it's hard
Dickory Doc, let's go to break on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. One final segment this Saturday afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Oh my, somebody is unconscious in the bottom. They just leveled. No, he's maybe getting up. They just leveled Tiger Cat receiver.
The again, as you said.
Yeah. Sorry.
Remus's eclectic taste in music.
You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website with your daily Winnipeg Jets morning papers is www.illegalcurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Michael Remus is behind the board.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire. Let's start with NHL linesmen. They are feeling the pinch in regards to the lockout, like a lot of the other sort of collateral damage, for lack of a better word, that's related to this work stoppage. How much do you think a veteran NHL ref makes per year?
I read the article.
Did you read the article?
I did.
I'm shocked that you read the article, I got to tell you.
When I was at the preparatory meeting with nobody but myself.
For the record, I had an excuse, and I said well beforehand that I was not going to be able to meet before the show.
That's true.
Fine.
You have no excuse.
I didn't show up there.
You showed up at 20 after 11.
There was no scheduled time. I mean, I showed up when I showed up.
Drunker over here. What, Remo?
I was going to make a guess. If you already read it. Can I just guess?
Sure.
85,000.
No.
Terrible guess.
Terrible, awful guess.
300 grand a year.
There you go.
I also read the article.
Yeah.
Then you weren't actually right. Isn't it like 340?
It's about 340, yeah.
Oh, come on. 300, 340. Yeah. I mean, what's an extra 40
grand? The
Lions
would make two-thirds of that, apparently.
Yeah. I was surprised the Lions would get paid that much.
Yeah.
Right, because they have to follow the lines. It's almost as difficult as following the hooking and the slashing, right? I mean, it's tough. Sometimes those calls are within a hair, an inch.
That's a great contribution from you, as usual.
Well, I'm just saying, the linesman should make... There should be a linesman association. Georges Larac should start a linesman union.
Those linesmen are making
less than minimum wage. Well, the guy that's in this article is Mike Savic, and he's been around for 20, 30 years.
Mike Savic?
He's six foot seven.
Mike Savic, when I used to go to the old Jets games...
He was always the tallest guy.
And we had seats to go
until Chara came around.
I go with my dad, and we had seats behind the visitors' penalty box, which was great to kind of interact with them. But he'd always stand on the blue line, and we were closer to the home where the Jets started. So whenever you're looking at from behind the penalty box, he'd be standing on the blue line, and you couldn't see the play because Svik would stand there, and he was so big, he was blocking the entire play. And he's still around.
He's one of the best.
Simply because of his height, he's probably one of the best known officials nowadays.
Yes, for sure.
The officials are
unnamed. Well, also, he was back in the day when they used to have names on the back of their
jerseys. Now they're just anonymous. You have no idea who the official is on any given day.
I hate that, by the way.
I know.
Yeah, you gotta hearken the days of Ronnie Hogarth.
Good reference.
There you go. That's a good reference there, Ezzy. Edmonton Oilers forward Ben Eager, has been arrested.
Like just now?
No, has been arrested after a disturbance.
Is he in the building?
After a disturbance in a Toronto bar last week, he was arrested. I believe it was
him and his brother.
Him and his brother were both arrested. Yeah. He was arrested for.
And they increased the charges.
Was he an Eager Beaver?
Threatening bodily harm. I think there was an assault charge in there.
Apparently really pretty bad, yeah.
Yeah, causing bodily harm and assault with a weapon. 28 years old. Does Ben Eager regain a job in the NHL after this incident?
Yep, he does, because there's still going to be guys who believe in fighting. The guy
can move around okay for a big, huge guy.
6'2", 240 pounds.
Can toss on a goal or two. I mean, he's a fourth line left wing fighter, and he'll find a job.
I got
if those allegations are true, I mean, he might be spending some time somewhere else for a while.
Threatening bodily harm, causing bodily harm, and assault with a weapon.
From what I read, it was an incident with the bouncer.
Yes.
And he started threatening him. Obviously, there's probably some alcohol involved. An interesting little tidbit here, a little nugget. Ben Eager won the fastest skater at the Edmonton Oilers Skills Competition. He's not a bad hockey player. You can look that up.
He's not a great hockey player, but he can move around a bit, and he's, you know, he just can't discipline himself. He's too tuned up for these things. So, apparently, that carries over to the bar as well.
Yeah. Adding alcohol to the equation is
not. Is he coming to my housewarming party, or is he under house arrest?
I think after this show, you're going to be under house arrest.
Yeah, really. How much do you think he gets paid?
Ben Eager?
Yeah.
Probably like $780.
Two-year, $3.3 million contract.
Well, that's good. I mean, you know, Steve Tambolini has done a masterful job there.
So you're saying when the Oilers are good again, it's not Steve Tambolini.
Again, Drew, if we put you in charge and you pick the top pick in every draft, I think you'd be okay, too.
He'll need that money for his defense lawyer.
The ECHL Trenton Titans have an offer if you're an NHL season ticket holder. They will offer you free tickets for Friday or Saturday, providing you show that you had purchased a 2012-2013 NHL ticket. Should more minor hockey league teams do these promotions? Give it away for free.
It depends on how many people you have in your building, Drew. I know David Branch said, I think CHL has felt about a 3-5% increase since the NHL lockout. I think AHL is about the same. So if you're not feeling that increase and you have a way of getting people into your building, then sure. And, you know, getting acquainted with what you're providing. No issue with that.
That's a good way to capitalize on the lockout. I mean, they're based in New Jersey, right? And you've got no hockey there. Give people a reason to come see. It's a good marketing ploy, at the very least. Again, people want to watch hockey, and I think this is great.
Meta World Peace, wrapping up Rapid Fire. Meta World Peace.
The first game when he came back after his, because remember it was like last year, so I was watching the game and it was, I guess, Christmas Day game.
Right.
And they kept calling him Ron Artest for the first half of the game.
Right.
And then they realized that it was actually Meta World Peace.
Meta World Peace, formerly.
Peace for three.
Formerly known as Ron Artest.
Yeah.
Had a chance to interact recently with
Drew. Hold on. I'm going to switch this.
That's the worst name ever.
Here's Rapid Fire for us to ask Drew. Drew, if you were going to switch your name, what name would you pick?
Feta World Peace.
Nice.
That's a good one. We didn't even arrange that one before.
We didn't. That was completely spontaneous.
Yeah, that was nice. it would have been Feta World Pizza, if you want to be perfectly accurate.
That name is just awful.
He had the chance to interact with the Stanley Cup. Obviously, the Kings and the Lakers share the Staples Center along with the
Clippers. And he was eating raisins or chocolates or something?
He asked if anyone has ever eaten almonds out of it. And if George Washington ever touched it. Two sort of bizarre questions to ask when you inspect the Stanley Cup for the first time. Of course.
Why almonds?
I don't know. Meta World.
Why George Washington?
I don't know. Meta World Peace.
Is he alive when the Stanley Cup started? George Washington?
I wouldn't think so.
Stanley Cup's been around since the early 20th century. Isn't Washington like 19th century?
Yeah.
Washington was 19th century, but
Washington.
How could he touch a cup when he wasn't 1870? Alive to touch the cup?
No, George Washington died in 1799.
Exactly. Well, there you go. So he's asking if a guy who wasn't alive when the Stanley Cup was created touched it.
He doesn't know.
It's Meta World Peace. The question.
Yeah. Again, he changed his name to Meta World Peace. So
you remember?
Yeah, I guess
him as,
if it's 1776 and he was before the father, I mean, he wouldn't have lived until 1870. Yeah,
right. Did Napoleon touch the Stanley Cup?
You remember Meta World Peace as Ron Artest climbing into the stands in Detroit?
Yeah.
Of course.
Beating up the fans.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you had to pick a current NHLer, who's most likely to go off the rocker and try and take on the fans?
Interesting question.
You don't get in trouble answering that question, Drew.
Yeah, we're going to get in trouble.
What are you trying to do, Drew? Set us up?
How does that get you in trouble?
Easy, Feta.
Yeah, that might get us in trouble. Nobody would do that anymore.
Fine. You guys are no fun at all.
Feta World Pizza.
Go to Cheers and Beers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And Cheers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
I tipped you off earlier, but my cheer is going to be Nicholas Backstrom for wearing number 99 to me is a sacrilegious.
You mean Jeer?
Number Jeer, sorry. Jeer, yes. I mean, absolutely Jeer him. Never mind the fact that he's regressed as a hockey player over the past 2 years.
Yeah.
You don't wear number 99. You know, if you wanna, maybe if you get 140, 50 points in the league, even that I wouldn't allow it, but the way you've been playing, shame on you.
Interesting point that you say that he's regressed as a hockey player the last couple of years.
Yeah.
He has. So is Ovechkin, actually.
Has he?
I'm going to cheer, soon to be, I think, President Barack Obama. I really liked what he said on Jay Leno's show.
Oh, okay.
You know, about the lockout, and he said, you know what? He actually, the thing that I liked the best about what he said, you know, he said, guys, figure it out. I'm sure you'll figure it out. But he said that...
It was deep.
The people that are... Just like
how
this,
deep do you want? He's the president of the United States. I'd hope he'd have more important things
deep.
To deal with.
He's deep.
I'm not.
He wrote poetry when he was at Harvard.
I know he's deep, but I would hope he'd have better things to deal with than
of course,
NHL.
I'm not talking about the comment. I'm talking about the reaction to the comment.
It was a mailbag question. Anyways, it
was a mailbag.
He
question.
Said that the fans
but
are
that
suffering
means that
the most.
You watch Jay Leno.
He said, I don't. No, I don't like Leno. I like Letterman. But I heard it. I thought that was nice that he said, you know, it's the fans that are really suffering. So that's my cheer.
That's fair enough. I'll wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer everybody that took part in the Champs for Charity hockey game in Chicago yesterday. I believe Andrew Ladd was there, Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Patrick Sharp, Blackhawks current, some Blackhawks old. They raised $323,500 for Chicago area Ronald McDonald House Charities. So good job by those players for, you know, granted, they should be playing NHL hockey, but while they're not doing that, they might as well raise some money for a good charity in the Chicago area. That's it for this Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch and John Davidson, president of hockey operations for the Columbus Blue Jackets. In case you missed any of that, the show, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe. Get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can also download the show on tsn1290.ca. Big thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, and the CGA, the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.IllegalCurve.com. For Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock, producer Tim, and producer Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290, your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.